The show is essential listening for spiritual workers, people who are constantly giving to others and who are at risk of burning out unless they follow these steps to keep that inner flame alive. Hello and welcome back to the Spiritual Freedom Show with Richard Lawrence. My name is Darren Ball. I'm the co-host of the show. And this is the podcast helping people to awaken their chakras, to unlock their psychic powers, and to discover true spirituality. So by the end of this episode, you'll discover what spiritual burnout is really about, what it means, and actually also the good news about what it doesn't mean. I've also asked Richard to share some of the priceless lessons that he has learned after being devoted for decades to a path of spiritual service, and in particular, some of the myths that people often get wrong. And finally, we'll be sharing two practical ways that you can replenish and feed that inner flame within you, no matter what service work that you are involved in. Now, if you haven't subscribed yet, be sure to hit that bell so you don't miss any of the future conversation between Richard and myself, sharing this essential wisdom that you can use on your path of spiritual awakening.
Richard.
Darren.
So we've got a very, I think, very important conversation today.
Yeah.
Which I'll summarize as spiritual burnout. I think it's a essential listening, I would say, for anyone, any spiritual worker, anyone who's in a role of a service-oriented role, repeatedly helping others, caregivers, nurses, etc. as well. Because burnout or compassion fatigue, I think some people might refer to it in that way, is a very real thing. And even, you know, I think we've talked about before, even spiritual teachers, you know, can suffer from something like this. And, you know, I think we could all be susceptible to it. And I think, but there are key things that we can do on the spiritual path, especially in the context of a life in service, in order to avoid this burnout.
Yeah.
And I wanted to talk to you about that today, because obviously you've spent a lifetime giving spiritual service, leading an organization devoted to spiritual service.
Yeah.
And, you know, in my observation, you seem to do this very well. And I know.
Well, thank you.
I'm just looking at you thinking, man, how does he do it?
So, well, I'm warming up.
Yeah, I know. So if you don't mind, I would love to get some of the benefit of your experience and just the things that you have learned on the path in your, you know, in yourself, but also in seeing so many other people walking the path as well.
Yeah, and walking off the path. Let's be really candid about it. Yeah. Well, I did come across, I was at the Festival for Mind, Body, Spirit in London. And one of the presenters there in the mind, body, spirit field, who I won't name, a woman came to me, quite well known and teaching spiritual development and wanted guidance. And she said, the problem is that I've lost the feeling for this. People want me to teach them and I'm trying to teach them. You hear about this in churches and priests and all sorts of paths. So I think that, you know, one can't be dogmatic. I think the first bit of good news, by the way, let's start with some good news. It's not real. Spiritual burnout, I mean, it might feel very real. It might be an existing existential problem that you have to face. Yes, I'm not diminishing it.
Yeah.
And it's good to face it and know it. But in the higher sense, it's not real. And by that, I mean, you've lost contact with your spark, your flame.
But
it's there.
Yeah. Got you.
That's the good news.
Mm.
So this woman said that she just didn't feel the enthusiasm, the desire to teach this anymore. But then people wanted her to do it and she felt compelled to do it. And that can happen to people.
Yeah.
And people's expectations. You can't be ruled by people's expectations. So I said to her, well, the things that you're teaching, and I'm not very familiar with whatever she's teaching.
Sure.
But I'm going to, just for this conversation, assume it's good teaching.
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
Are you doing it yourself? Very simple question. She said, well, no, I don't have time to do that now. I'm always teaching.
I see.
I said, well, you've got to cut some of your classes and do it yourself. Comes back to that Chinese philosophy. You know, years ago I wrote a book, Little Book of Yin and Yang.
Oh, yeah.
It's actually not available in English now and into several languages. But I find that philosophy of Yin and Yang, I am not an expert on it. I was asked to do that actually by HarperCollins, that book, and it was very interesting to do after my Little Book of Karma. But it's a great philosophy, and it's all about the balance between these two forces. Some would say, some mystics would say five, because if you look at the symbol of yin and yang, you've got the light in the darkness, the darkness in the light. That's four things. And then you've got the whole of it. Yeah. So you could have the five elements in there as well. But coming back to the two, it's very straightforward. It's all about an imbalance between the two. Just to throw an interesting thought out here, it's long occurred to me, two of the great sages, two of the most advanced people who've ever walked the earth, Confucius and Lao Tse, lived, they reckon, approximately in the same time period. Many people debate, many scholars debate, did they ever meet or not? But and one was a kind of a mystery figure, Lao Tse, a Liberian, no one knows much about him. The other, Confucius, very engaged in politics, in manners, in civil life, in how to live. And it's occurred to me, because I certainly believe they were both avatars, they were both sent to Earth for missions. Maybe that was a plan, because one in a way represents yin, and another represents yang. Yeah. I've never heard that said anywhere else, but it's very interesting. If that is true, they might have been together as part of a plan in the same period to bring the two essential balancing aspects. So generally speaking, when somebody is suffering spiritual burnout, on the whole, and you can't be dogmatic, one of the reasons would be, very simply, they neglected their inner life.
Yeah.
The Master Etheria said, you know, go onwards, go outwards, go upwards. I think I've got it right. Mm. But never forget to go inwards. If you forget to go inwards, if you think that'll just take care of itself, then you're in danger of spiritual burnout.
I think because that's something that you've always done.
Because I want to.
Yeah.
But I will say there are times when I have fallen off, you know, lessened my inner activity, and I've paid a price for it. So you need to keep that going. But you're right, though. I have a tremendous interest. As a matter of fact, my route was the inner path. Mm-hmm. And I kind of came from there to the service because I realized service was a greater thing.
Yeah.
It happened very quickly for me, that changeover. So I've always been rooted in inner development. So I think that is vital. I think it's vital for everybody on this path in one way or another. Don't get me wrong. If you are serving others, and if as part of your service you're doing things such as prayer, mm-hmm. proper prayer, dynamic prayer, yep. where you channel the energy out through your heart center, you will be feeding the flame to some extent. But a very, very simple and effective thing to do is breathing exercises. It's good to do it every day if you can. It doesn't take very long. Doesn't need to take very long. It could do, but doesn't need to. Could be done in 10 to 15 minutes. And that alone will tend to feed the inner flame.
I mean, what would you just say in terms of like the experiences you've had in the last year, for example, which have been incredible? I mean, how do you think that those have affected the, you know, being on the path of service for you in terms of going within and kindling that fire and that flame? You know, is it a deeper realization? Is it a deeper... love? Is it? What is it, do you think?
Well, one thing that I've found, and, you know, we've talked about this before, I think, is that I can look at something now, I can look at a teaching now, and I know what it means.
So,
I'm not saying I know the fullness of it, because that's an ongoing thing, but I suddenly go, that's what that means. Some of the things that I've been aware of for decades, but kind of, as it were, put on a shelf.
Mm.
I mean, I'll give you one example. There is a practice in it's not considered to be a practice, but it is a practice. It's in the eighth blessing in the 12 blessings,
mm-hmm.
and it basically says something along these lines. This is the Master Jesus speaking through Dr. King. Turn thine eye to the sun. This isn't the exact words because I haven't got it in front of me.
Sure.
And let it fill your eye, or some phrase such as that. Mm. And it will burn your heart clean of impurities. Now, I've read that many times, but I haven't thought, oh gosh, that's a practice for me to do.
Mm.
Now, I realize to do it fully, such as the way maybe Dr. King would do, would be a full rise of Kundalini to the Christ Center and of complete realization and so forth. But it's given by the Master Jesus for us to use. So I've done it. And I've had a result from it. And I understand why the energy, it doesn't say it burns your eye clean of impurities. It burns thine heart clean of impurities. And of course, I realize that if you feed a higher chakra or psychic center, it will flow down and feed the lower ones. If you feed a lower one, it won't necessarily flow up.
I see. Okay.
That's the sort of thing. I mean, it's just a little example of things that I've seen for years. Now I know what they mean, and to some degree have can practice them.
Mm. And just in the spirit of this balance, I mean, one thing that seems to, I was over as well, it seems to be a balance between kind of activity and then also inspiration, like effort and inspiration.
Yeah.
What would you say, you know, in terms of helping people to achieve that balance?
It would be very dependent on the individual. Mm. And I think if you're at it for a long while, you get a feeling for when you need to be feeding that inner flame. Because, you know, what is burnout? The flame burns out, the wick. You know, the wick is just dead. There's nothing burning there. And you can start to feel that. But on the other hand, you have to act on that feeling. And where people are really lost is when they don't know their burnout. I should throw something else into the equation, though, because I'm making the assumption in this, as I said about this particular woman who came to see me, wasn't doing her own practices. I am making the assumption there that those practices that she was teaching, and I don't know what they were exactly. I know who she is, but I don't know what they were. But I'm assuming they're good ones. They're the right ones for her to be teaching, because that's another thing. If you're going down the wrong direction, that's another thing that will lead to burnout. And sometimes that burnout is a good thing, strange as it may sound. Nobody wants burnout.
That path.
Yes, because you're on the wrong path. You're going. So first of all, you've got to feed the inner flame. Mm. Second point, you've got to make sure you're going in the right direction. Mm. Is it just because you've been neglecting your inner life, which is very common indeed?
Yeah.
Or is it because actually, it's run its distance. Mm-hmm. You still need to go within and reflect on what path you should be taking. But to do that, though, again, you need to there are two things we need to do. One is to energize ourselves.
Okay.
And we do this through, and I mentioned breathing exercises one way, visualization is another way. And the other thing we need to do is raise our energies. Now, if we can raise our energies, or some of our energies, if we can start to activate higher chakras, and I'm going to focus here particularly on the heart center, then we will radiate love. Then we will experience love. Then we will feel love. So you can go around, you know, people can go around giving service to others, and many people do, and it's a great thing. But you need the motoring force of love to drive you to do it. And that comes from a technical point of view, from an activation of the heart center.
Yeah, that's. I think that gives a mystical element to what we're talking about as well. There's a real thing happening energetically, which can, which, as you say, helps to keep open the heart center, allow that love to be flowing and to be the motoring force behind us. So it's the inspiration and the fuel behind it. There's one other element here, just before we go into that topic of love a bit more, because I want to focus on that, particularly with the person that I want to bring in today and their quote.
Yeah.
But there's one other element about the balance of rest and relaxation versus spiritual work. So I just wondered, you know, what you might say about that, you know, the role of rest and relaxation, how you fit it into a life of service.
And you can't inspire a full cup, by the way. You know, because you have to be open. But there's yin and yang right there. Well, I have heard, and I'm not going to name him. He's one of the lamas. I won't say which one, well-known one. And I've seen a statement attributed to him that the deepest form of meditation is sleep.
Mm.
If it's true that he said that, he doesn't know what the deepest form of meditation is. So rest and relaxation are necessary, but they aren't the answer. And people can fall into that trap. They're very pleasant. I enjoy it myself. And there's nothing wrong in it. It's not a crime. It's not something we should deny ourselves as a habit or something. But it is not the answer, because it's a passive thing. And sleep, yes, I can see why you might think that or might say that. Because, you know, the brain waves slow down in a state of sleep. Although your brain can be extremely active in the sleep state, as a matter of fact. So even that doesn't necessarily happen. But it's not just about, there are two things. There is, as I said, energizing yourself, but also raising your consciousness. And rest and relaxation doesn't actually of itself necessarily raise your consciousness. But that might well lower it. It might bring you to a static level, but it won't necessarily inspire you. So it isn't enough. It's one of the things. I mean, obviously things like exercise is essential, you know, diet, all these things are vital, and having enough rest when you can. Sometimes you can't. Sometimes you have to sacrifice that, but when you can. But that isn't enough. You've got to constantly be raising yourself. And I mentioned feeding the inner flame. Yes. And I would say that's done through spiritual practices. Mm-hmm. And there are many of those. The ones I recommend are in Realize Your Inner Potential, which I co-authored with Dr. George King. That is a set of practices that I think, if some of the great geniuses of history, the artistic and scientific geniuses, I'm going to say particularly artistic, musical, and so on, had that book, I think their work would have been far better in certain cases, because you can see burnout in some of them. You can see why is it, and you can see it in modern-day people too, that their best work is done in their youth very often. Not always. There are exceptions.
Yeah.
Make an exception, whatever one thinks of him. Wagner's arguably his greatest work was done in his latter years. So it doesn't always need to happen. He had a very strong will, and he was an unusual person. And I'm not saying everything he said was right, because it wasn't. Some of the things he said were very wrong, but he kept active. But there are a number of people. You can see them now. You can see some of the sort of very well-known people in the field of rock and roll and pop and so on, who are still working. You have to hand it to them, you know, in their 80s, and they're being well paid, but you still got to hand it to them.
Still perform.
But what are they doing? What is it people want to hear in their concerts? Stuff they wrote 40 years ago, or if it's younger, like 20 years ago. They're not doing it now. Why is that? There is a third element. You know, I've mentioned losing direction. I've mentioned not feeding the inner flame. There's also the question of detunement.
I see.
And there are many things that can detune you. I'd like to give an example, if I may, and I want to do this with the greatest possible respect, of William Wordsworth. Okay. Now, I'm not an English scholar. If I've got my facts right, then just take this as purely as a sort of theoretical example, because I might be wrong. And I say this with tremendous respect for him. Now, here's a person who wrote these lines in the 18th century. I think he was in his 20s, I believe, when he wrote this ode at Tintern Abbey. He described this. I'm going to read this, because this is a description to me of a basic state of samadhi that could only be written by someone who'd entered it.
Yeah, because where would he got to?
Yeah, and he didn't know. He'd never heard of samadhi. Nobody had it in those days in the West.
Yeah.
But these are his words. He described that serene and blessed mood in which the affections gently lead us on until the breath of this corporeal frame and even the motion of our human blood almost suspended, we are laid asleep in body and become a living soul. While with an eye made quiet by the power of harmony and the deep power of joy, we see into the life of things.
Yeah. When you look at it from
that's the third eye.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a technical description. The suspension, almost suspension of the motion of human blood.
There's no way you could know that.
It is. Yeah. I think Dr. King, who's entered it many times, described it as a state of almost like living death.
Yeah.
This is someone who was obviously extremely advanced, I would say. And now I'm going to give my opinion, and I apologize if I've got any of my facts wrong, because I'm not a scholar on this. Mm. But it's only as an example of someone who possibly became detuned, and he's only one example. And I think probably by this level, because people have to realize we are living on the physical plane. You might call it level one. There are six levels, according to many schools of mysticism, above this one.
Mm-hmm.
They are higher levels, and they have different preoccupations. I mean, the preoccupations on this level, understandably, are very much related to procreation and therefore family, because that's what happens here. That's what has to happen here for people to reincarnate. Yeah. But on the higher levels, they don't. And so the approach is different, but the higher you get, the priorities change very much.
Mm-hmm.
If you get onto a higher plane, the sort of things we talk about in the Spiritual Freedom Show, for example, I mean, you and I are round pegs in round holes here. I mean, we're doing what we want to do. We are being what we actually are. Mm-hmm. We're saying what we really think. We're very fortunate. you know, thank goodness for the internet, because I went through decades of going onto the media, and it was great, you know, to do. I did many, many shows, TV and radio shows, for decades, and still do sometimes. But you have to almost play a certain game, even to get on. You don't sell out, but you have to tailor it. Here we don't tailor it. And that's another key, actually, to avoiding burning out, just being what you are. But
that's good.
Being what you are, but just existing on this plane, let's just say, and I'm given opinion that this is the case, William Wordsworth was an advanced soul who had entered deep states of consciousness on higher planes before he was ever incarnated, came here, and in his early poetry, and this one in particular, I would say, from my limited knowledge, this one is one of the greatest poems ever written. In poetry, you don't have to say, well, I entered this, and I, because it's poetry, and people, you have some loose freedom to say it the way you want to say it. But it does describe something very specific. Now, as the decades went on, they say, it is said, William Wordsworth changed in the sense that he got very highly acclaimed. He became involved in politics. He became an official figure in an era, the Victorian England, when officialdom was, you know, very, very, it's a very different kind of political correctness. I don't think any political correctness is great myself, but there was an order of the day, and he apparently enjoyed it, so they say. And he also got in, they say he had one eye on his poetry and one eye on his canal shares.
I see.
These are things that say they may be unfair, but he certainly became more of an establishment figure. He fitted in more. He was affected. He was highly praised. When he wrote the early poems, he wasn't being highly praised. And these things can affect you. They don't have to affect you, but they can detune you. They can bring your vibration down to accommodate a lower plane of existence, which we're living on. And many would say, from what I've read anyway, that his greatest poetry was written in his youth, on his younger years, so that it would look, if that's true, that some of the flame of inspiration burnt out to a degree at least. He still wrote poetry. But so those are some of the things one has to be careful of. Other people's expectations, being detuned by the way other people think. It'd be very easy with what you and I do. Because, you know, people think it's wacky, they think it's offbeat, they think people are frightened of the overlap with mental health issues, with mediumship, say. They should be aware of it, but not frightened by it. They should discriminate between a genuine medium and someone who has mental health issues. There's all the difference in the world, but it does require some effort. It may not fit in with their culture, their family. So these are all things also that can lead people to a point which you might call spiritual burnout. So it's being in the wrong direction, which, yeah, that then needs to change. So I've come across people who've had so-called nervous breakdowns and all kinds of crises in their lives, and those very crises have caused them to find the path they were meant to be on.
Yeah,
and they've said this is the best thing that ever happened to me. So it's not necessarily all bad. So that can happen. It can be just straightforward. Most commonly, neglecting the inner life. You know, the inner life brought you to a path. Then you're on it. You think, right, I've arrived now. I've got here now. Now I just carry on and do it. No. And it's got to grow. You can't, I mean, a lot of psychics that I've met are static. They reach a point and that's enough. It's just part of the journey. You've got to be aspiring to more. You asked me about the experiences I've had in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
What the biggest thing I've come away with for myself is that it was incomplete, that it wasn't a complete rise of Kundalini, that I need to work on my chakras. I've got far greater understanding of the psychic centers and their function than I've ever had, immensely greater, and that they can't be neglected. And I've realized things about my own development, which spurs me on to think, right, now I've got to, this is only a step along the way.
No, that's a very interesting insight, because it just shows that, you know, we've never really arrived. We're only partway on the journey, no matter what we're doing.
Yeah.
Even as practicing psychic, that's only beginning to manifest some some potential of some chakras rather than our real destiny, which is enlightenment and then ascension.
True. And I think what happens to some lamas and so on is that some and yogis or whatever tradition they're in, I'm not picking on any one tradition, is that people around them who aren't at their level revere them. And they buy into that reverence themselves.
That's tricky.
Now, the reverence might be very good for the students, their students, their followers. That might be helpful to their followers. But they themselves, they've got to look beyond themselves. I'm very, very lucky because I was very close to Dr. King. So there's there's like such a gulf there.
Yeah, there's a James Park. That's hard.
So, you know, I'm always mindful, no matter what you reach. This isn't it. And when you've been around someone like that, as much as I was privileged to be, then you know. He didn't regard himself as the bee's knees even. I mean, he said he had things to learn and, you know, things to develop. And he was critical of himself. Yeah. He could even be critical in some examples of some of the other avatars, not often in a way that they perhaps gave too much, more of a strategic way, actually, than fault-finding way. But he never rested. He was always examining and looking at himself and thinking, you know. I remember having one conversation with him, and it was about bishops.
Oh, yeah.
And I said to him, well, according to the Christian church, there are two kinds of bishops. One is the fisherman.
Is it?
And one is the shepherd.
Okay.
And so the fisherman, bishop, is the one who brings people to the flock.
Okay.
And the shepherd is the tenth of the flock. And ideally, I suppose a bishop would be both, actually. But as a result of me saying this to him, he started examining himself and looking at his own flaws, alleged flaws, which he didn't, I don't accept, by the way, but he did. This is my point. And I said, look, you know, you're saving the world. I mean, this isn't about you. but it's an example of there's someone who could look at themselves and see
even at that level.
Yeah. As when you lose that, and some people do lose it, and some artists lose it, some performers lose it, they get filled with praise, they buy into the praise, they believe they've arrived, and of course then they haven't arrived, and then their creativity in this case falters because they're not aspiring anymore to be a greater composer and a greater artist or whatever it might be. And to be a greater composer or a greater artist actually doesn't mean that you'll be more popular necessarily. You might be less popular. A greater teaching might be much less popular. And the case of Dr. King is very marked.
Yeah.
And it was said by his own master, who's called the Master Aetherius, that he's basically too advanced for a lot of people on this earth.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a hallmark of the level you're on.
No, I think those are fascinating points. I hadn't even, you know, really thought about that. The example of Wordsworth he gave, I think it's very good. You know, because you can definitely see how you can just be worn down by the tide of conditioning and general pressure for social conformity and the sort of just the temptation of it in general to be more like what this plane is rather than to aspire to the greater things that are the potential within all of us.
I mean, I do think, you know, and this might be, and if this is perceived as arrogant, then I'm sorry, I just have to be perceived as arrogant. But if we were putting out the ideas we're putting out now on the Spiritual Freedom Show on certain higher levels, I think there'd be no, you know, nothing controversial. In fact, some people will tell me something I didn't know. What else have you got? But, you know, that it would be just flow fine, even whether it was their creed or not. Because when you get to the very, very high levels, I do believe they aren't limited by creed or dogma at all. So it's not like I follow this path, you follow that. They can see the truth behind them all and they can accept them all. There's no resistance. When you're on this level, there's this innate resistance. I mean, it's across the board, but you can see it. It comes politically. We've talked about this before, actually. UFOs is a good example of it. It's closed down one way or another because it doesn't fit. It's not what they want. It doesn't suit their lives. And people dismiss things sometimes which don't suit their lives rather than looking into them and changing their lives.
And and as a spiritual worker, so especially someone who's spreading teaching, especially good teaching, that the abrasion there can weigh you down. And let's think it's a good example of having the will. I think that's certainly
a tremendous will. Yeah. I know, definitely made mistakes, said some wrong things. It was a different climate, a different age, but he carried on with his work. And I studied him at university because I did a music degree, but I do think his later work would be generally agreed to be some of his great work. But it's unusual. It's very common. You have these, and sometimes you have these poets and someone who die young, live in poverty, write their great work. But if they live on, sometimes just, I'm not going to, this isn't Wordsworth now, but sure, sometimes people sell out. They start to get, and people do it in their lives. You don't have to be a great artist to do this. They can see what works. They can see what makes them popular, even socially, and they become that person, but it's not them. You have to be true to what you are. You don't thrust yourself on everybody's. You don't force others to listen to you. If they don't want to, then forget it. Don't even spend time doing it. But you yourself, you have to know what you are.
I think it's a beautiful message to end on there, and I love that. You know, the theme of this show really for me has been keeping that flame of inspiration.
Absolutely.
So thank you very much, Richard.
Thank you.
So what do I take away from that? Well, it's clear that a healthy diet, sufficient rest and exercise is something that we all need, our body needs, right? But by themselves is not enough for what we're talking about today. If we want to avoid burnout, we've got to take those two steps that Richard described, which is number one, to energize ourselves, and number two, be always working to raise our consciousness. Because it's about keeping that inner flame alive. What also came out of that conversation for me, though, is that there's more than one type of burnout that we're talking about here. You have, on the one hand, the person who is spiritually inspired, who's devoted themselves to a spiritual path and even to spiritual work to some degree, but for whatever reason becomes jaded or exhausted and ineffective. And then there's this other type of person who's generally inspired to pursue more than an ordinary material life, but somewhere along the way becomes detuned, right? From that initial inspiration, falls out of touch with their own higher self and that initial connection, that initial deeper connection that they had, like the example, in theory at least, that Richard gave about William Wordsworth, who had this tremendous outpouring of creative work in his younger years, and which faded off as he grew older and perhaps became more conditioned by just the nature of this material physical plane on which we live, and its conditions and its values, which are being affirmed by almost everything we see around us, which highlights, I think, for all of us, the importance of continuing to inspire ourselves with the truth of understanding or reminding ourselves what life is really about, and continuing on a regular basis, as Richard described, to go within, not just to energize ourselves, but to raise our consciousness through practices and the study of spiritual wisdom. In any case, it's about keeping that inner flame alive within us, especially that wellspring of inspirational force, which is the love of God through realization, and which is the inspirer of the greatest of all service works. Now, if you enjoyed that episode about avoiding spiritual burnout, be sure to follow or subscribe to the channel so you don't miss any future conversations from Richard or myself sharing profound spiritual wisdom and spiritual practices that you can apply on your own journey of spiritual awakening. Thanks for tuning in, and see you next time.